So I'll try to fill in just from my experience a little bit around some of what has been said today. And I know there's a lot of people in this room who have work around death or have experienced death of loved ones, and there's a wealth of experience just in this room. So these are just my experiences and just some thoughts that I have around them. I never was around death very much until I think the first...
Until I came to the monastery.
And then the people that invited me to live on their property, which is now Casa Serena, where the women stay, Peter was diagnosed with lung cancer at the same time as a dear friend of mine down in the peninsula was diagnosed with lung cancer. And she'd already had a double mastectomy over the years, so she'd had her fair share. And so it's kind of going on with both of them. And I ended up being a caregiver for Mary, which I'd never done before. This seems to be the way I do things. I kind of just jump in to things I've never had any experience with, and it's a great learning environment. That Mary was very fortunate, and Peter, I didn't actually take care of. I was more supportive for his wife, Mary. And then 2 years later, she was diagnosed with colon cancer, and I became her caregiver for about 6 weeks, I think. And that was a blessing because we were right next door to the monastery, and every day Ajahn Pasano came over in the morning and spent a half hour, 45 minutes just to be available if Mary had questions, or he would just sit quietly with her. And then Ajahn Purnadamo had a lot of nursing experience, so there was always somebody at hand who could offer a lot of support, and then I could do the hands-on with Mary's sister who was there helping out. And in the end, we felt, and she even, Mary's sister said at the memorial, she said she lost a sister, but she felt like she gained a sister. And it really did feel very much that way. And then my last winter retreat, I was down visiting my parents because my mom's health was not very good. We'd already thought we were going to lose her. She had congestive heart failure she also had something called Kress syndrome, which is an autoimmune thing, and her lungs basically were turning into some kind of parchment kind of tissue, and the efficacy was diminishing. So I was down at my parents', and it was actually my dad's birthday at that point, so my brother from Seattle was there, and his two kids were there also, and he got word that his wife had died suddenly in the shower, had a heart attack, and so I went back to help him with whatever he had to face, and there was a lot to face on many levels. So in that instance, that was with my mom. My mom died last June, and my sister-in-law died in February, last February. My mom, we knew she was going to go. We finally got word that it was time to go on palliative care, and I have been reflecting on death a lot over the years, and I knew my mom was going to go, and even with that, I went in to pay my respects to Lumpur and take my leave, and I just couldn't hold it together because I was like, I don't want to be going down there for this, because I knew that I was going down to take care of my mom until she died, and I also knew that there was nothing else and nowhere else that I would have gone, that I would be doing. That was what I wanted to do as well, even though I didn't want to be doing it. So that, I guess, in those experiences, kind of one thought that's come up in hearing a lot of this stuff is, you know, there's a lot of workshops that are offered about death and dying. People do hospice, and I've never done a hospice training, and I bet anything they cover this. But we get a lot of ideals about death and dying, and one thing that I think is really important is this thing about uncertainty. We do not know what the experience is going to be like. Death is not a pretty thing. It's the breakup of the body. It's written in the suttas everywhere about the breakup of the body. And you know, my mom, because it was so close, I saw it more clearly. And it was very difficult to watch that happen. My mom, one thing that was really lovely is my mom and dad have a very strong Catholic background. They have a lot of faith. And so one thing that I did with my mom a year before she died, when we thought she was dying, is I basically asked forgiveness, which is very much a Buddhist tradition, but I didn't use those words. So I made it more general, and I just said, Mom, there's things I've done in my life that I have a lot of regret about. And my mom was right there, and she said, I forgive you. And then I said it to my dad because, you know, we never know. And my dad was a little less comfortable with it. He said, oh, you haven't done anything. So, and that was good enough. That was, you know. And my sister was there. And for my sister, this is really hard stuff for her to face. It's just she doesn't have that strength. She doesn't realize she has the strength. And what she feels more is the attachment side. And just what she was focused on was more, how am I going to live when my mom dies? My mom's my best friend. So in the end, what happened is I was with my mom all the time. And my mom had confidence in me. She trusted me. She felt I was strong in inwardly and outwardly. And to my mom, that gave a lot of peace. And so I became the administrator of the medicines, and that's not a choice I would have made because I'm not really familiar with medicines, and I could call hospice, but I felt very much on my own. And then you have to face the thing of, you know, my mom, her experience in the hospitals in the past was that medicine, some of the medicines, she had strong hallucinations, and they were frightening hallucinations for her. So then what I saw come up was, well, I want her to be comfortable, but if we give her too much, she's not going to be accessible to us. And I had to really let go of that. I mean, I was there for my mom, so that really wasn't too much of an issue, but also how much is enough and how much, you know, is going to make her have these horrible hallucinations. And I did have to deal with her having some horrible hallucinations. I would sit up. There were at least two or three nights where everybody else was asleep, and my mom and I were sitting there, and she was filled with fear because of what she thought was happening. And we would just sit and talk. And that's where I'm really grateful for the training, because if you've sat with a mind that kind of goes all over the place and you've done that a lot, then it's helpful to be with someone else. It allows you to find a ground, a center, that allows you to be with that. You can tap into your breath. And just that knowledge that I was there for her helped a lot, because it was like, okay, this isn't about me. I don't want this to be happening. And then also trying to be creative. What can I say to her that will help her relax around this? And finally, in the end, the one time I just called her on, I said, Mom, you know, you said you trusted me. Do you trust me? And she said, yeah, I trust you. And then I said, Mom, if you trust me, can you trust that? I realize that this feels very real to you, but can you trust that there's a possibility that not all of this is real, that some of this could be the medicine? And she said, okay, I can trust that. And then I said, then I think all you can do right now is just pray and ask God to give you strength and guidance and peace. And then she went to bed and she went to sleep. And she told me the next morning that had been really helpful. You know, I was grabbing straws. I didn't know what else to do. So, you know, the practice gives us that center to respond from. And you have to kind of be present, not knowing what the next thing that's going to happen is. And you can count on it that it's going to be unexpected. So, and there were times that were not pretty. There was some tension with my sister at times because of certain things that I won't go into. And there was one night where I kind of responded in a really strong way to something that my sister was doing, and then she got really upset. We were in the room with my mom, and I immediately saw, oh my gosh, this is just exactly what I don't want to bring into my mom's room while she's dying. But then I apologized to my sister later, with my mom and dad there, and I just said, you know, we kind of lost it. And, you know, so it's just, you have to be prepared for all of this stuff, and you're never going to know exactly what's going to happen. My mom, my dad, I was concerned about him. 9 days before my mom passed, they had celebrated 63 years of marriage.
Ooh.
They were very close. It's not like they spent all day, every day together, but they were in the same house. And my dad would go up and do his thing, and then he would come down and sit, and he would talk to my mom for 10 minutes. And, you know, and he notices that lack. So now it's shifted into talking to my dad. Oh, there's just going back to my mom, a couple things that, and this may not work for everybody, so it's just, it worked with my mom. We talked about her death, asked her how she felt about it. She was able to talk about it, because after a year and a half of congestive heart failure symptoms and times when you feel like you can't breathe and complete lack of energy, you know, she could hardly walk across the room without getting winded. And, you know, she was moving closer and closer to a place of acceptance. I talked to her about after she died. I said, I would like to wash the body with anybody in the family who'd like to participate. How would you feel about that? And she was like, if you want to do that, that's okay. And mom, if we do that, what would you like us to put you in? You know, it doesn't seem important, but it's kind of like it's helping her and us kind of take that next step. Even though it wasn't real at that moment, it's still moving in that direction. And so she said, oh, it doesn't matter what I'm in. And then it was the next day, she said, well, you know, you know that black and white shirt? So there was something kind of sweet in that. And then I talked to her and I told, because when my sister-in-law had died, we did a meal offering here in honor of her. And my family didn't come, but I let them know what was happening. We took photographs. But Jeannie and Beth and other people participated, and Sandra brought some food, and we did it in honor of my sister-in-law. So I told, and my mom had known that I'd done that, so I asked my mom, I said, you know, we did the meal offering in honor of Sherry, and we shared that merit with her. And I want to do that for you. Is there any kind of food that you would like to have us offer? And she said immediately, whatever the monks would like the most. So, you know, and in that way, then when we did that ceremony, she had already participated in that. She had already benefited from that in herself. And, you know, in some ways it was really hard watching someone die and being with someone through that process, especially someone who you were attached through an umbilical cord for all those months in the womb. And I don't know if I ever could have been prepared for what the separation actually felt like. It's been wretched in moments. But we have the opportunity to say these things, and we don't always. So another thing it's something that I've always held important is when I leave people, and you hear this all the time, but boy, when you realize how abrupt and how finite, how final death feels, really don't ever let those bad moments last for very long. And if they do something that helps you clean out any bad feeling, and that, you know, that you can ask for forgiveness after the person is gone. You can still communicate with them. It comes from here.
How your family responded to the emotion.
Yeah, so when my mom did that, and also my sister, who had a really hard time with this, my mom could no longer go in the shower, so my sister and I bathed her, and I asked my sister, do you want to help? My mom was remarkable. As soon as she could not do it herself, she was completely at ease with us helping her. And I think that's exceptional. That's not something I think is witnessed very often. I think usually it takes some time to adjust to having people wipe you, bathe you. But so my sister and I bathed my mom, and my sister took the areas of the body that she was most comfortable with, which meant the legs or the arms or the washing the hair. But my sister emailed me later, and she said, that was the most profound thing I've ever done in my life, and that will stay with me forever. And then after my mom died, there were a few of us with her through the night. My sister happened to be the one with her, which I think was my mom's last gift to my sister. My sister was the one with her when she actually took her last breath. And we were there within moments, because we were all just downstairs. And so we called everybody, and people came, and then we said, let's bathe the body. Does anybody who wants to help bathe the body can help, and if you don't want to, it's okay. Well, my 11-year-old nephew did not want to, and so he didn't, and it was completely open. But I was shocked because I didn't expect this. My father, two of my brothers, my sister-in-law, my 17-year-old niece, my sister, and myself, we just all were involved in bathing the body. My sister, my dad, and I, just out of respect for my mother, did the more private areas, and we dressed her. And then she died in the morning, and this was totally open. I had no idea this would happen either, but it just unfolded, and I think this is important, is to let things unfold. We were there with the body for a good 6 hours, and what ended up happening is some of the neighbors came in, much against their comfort, but they weren't forced. They came on their own will. One of the neighbors heard, immediately had flowers come in, and my nephew and niece were laying next to the body, holding her. My niece wrote a letter to her and read it out. My other sister-in-law came with my two nephews, and they did some prayers. And I couldn't have asked for anything more special, because it was such a powerful time for everybody, just to be together and to see it's a body, but also to be with that body. And I've experienced this before, so you think everything's going smoothly, and then it was time to take the body away, and they came to take the body. And so I got up right away to go deal with the people. And as I was walking out of the room to go down and do the paperwork, this thought was, oh my God, I'm never going to see her again. And it's kind of, you just don't know what's going to come up. You just have to be ready for anything and be real patient with yourself. The neighbors rallied. I mean, people really came forward. So it's just giving the space for that to happen, I think. Really not trying to define things too much. And then we did a meal offering here, and Nook's mother had died, and so Nook and I talked about, well, why don't we just do our meal offering together? And then pretty soon other people got involved, and we set up a table, and we put the pictures, and people came, I didn't even know were coming, and they brought their pictures, and we had a table full of pictures of people who had died with this meal offering. And Jeannie and I had a special offering that we wanted to make, a reliquary that we've gotten in Hawaii for Ajahn Chah's ashes when we have our new building. And it was very joyful, and part of that joy was that fact that we're all related in birth, maybe old age, but sickness and death. And just that joining in that, we shared the joy of doing something positive, and that was really uplifting. And then now, traditionally in Thailand, when somebody dies, people will print Dhamma books and share them with their loved one, in honor of their loved one. So I've kind of had it in the back of my head that I want to do something like that. So right now I'm transcribing talks and Lumpur Tata retreat, on a metta retreat back in 2008. And so I'm transcribing the talks right now. And as I do that, I'm sharing the merit with my mother. So as I'm getting tired of type, 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 oh, what was that? Go back, reverse, go back, listen again. What is it? Type, 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 type. Oh, wait, what was that? And I start to feel, this is for mom. And so it's a point of practice, as well as sharing the merit, and something that will also feel beneficial to others. And I think that's important, and those are things we can keep doing. You can do it on those days, the 40 days or 100 days, but really let's just do it whenever it arises and it feels like appropriate. So those are some of the main points that I was thinking of, is just kind of like, don't think your past experience is going to be what your experience is this time, because it's undefined, it's uncertain. And my experiences with Peter and Mary, and even with Jay when he died, I felt a lot of joy after they died. When my mom died, I felt joy that she was out of that suffering, but very soon afterwards, the grief just came right in. So, you know, we just have to really keep paying attention, be open to... my brother came while my mom was... A couple of days before she died, she was still conscious and actually did a rosary with her. It was fantastic. It was very beautiful to witness. So it's just kind of being open to what others have to bring in as well. So, yes.
Just on that, but what others have to bring, that day you had that meal offering, we were in Yosemite.
Yeah.
And say what Ajahn Janako did.
Yeah. Oh, so Ajahn Janako, his... So it kind of, we were trying to figure a date, and the date that Nook and I could do it was a date when five members of the community were on their week away into Yosemite, and Ajahn Janako was one of those people, and his grandfather had died a year ago November. So we wanted to include...
His cousin, too.
Oh, and his cousin, too, that's right.
Yeah, we wanted,
his cousin had died very suddenly, so we were going to include them. I had photographs. And so they were in Yosemite and couldn't be there, but they knew it was happening. And that day, he hiked to the top of Mount Daniel in Yosemite. And what did he have? He had
a few sacred objects.
Yeah. So he and Tangkasapo, I think, were up there. And they probably burned some incense and did some chanting.
Yeah.
And then they put these and put stones and made a little chedi up there.
Mm-hmm.
So they participated from afar.
Mm-hmm. On top of the mountain, and actually there were some other people up there, and I think they explained to them what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite lovely.
Mm. Anyway, that's just some thoughts, and I'm sure everybody has some amazing stories and things to share. I do want to say one more thing, because I think it's important. I have to own up to one thing, and that's it. As soon as I got back to the monastery and had the space, because I was with my dad for a month, what started coming up was doubt. And I don't think this is uncommon either. Did I do the right thing? I was in charge of the medicines. Was she really as comfortable as she could have been? And I tell you, that's self-torture. So, you know, you do have to be... I didn't see that coming. And I promised her. She said, whatever, I don't want you to feel bad, whatever happens. And I said I wouldn't, and I did. So I've asked her forgiveness a few times. And that's kind of, you know, it's not hitting as hard now, but I had to do a lot of work around that. And remind myself that I was there for her, and I really did give her 100%. And it's just where the mind goes. So that's all. Really.